I just got to warn you so that you don't have, you know, it could be, we could really have some terrible misunderstandings here. Now, I must also point out that the views expressed on the following program do not necessarily represent the attitude of the management or even of the speaker and the performer himself. God knows where they come from. I just don't know. Yeah, I mean, you know, we got to salute one great athlete here. We just got a note here in the news in Holyoke, Mass. Fantastic. No, Holyoke, Maine. Just a tremendous. Holyoke, Maine. Yeah, there's I didn't know there was a Holyoke, Maine. But anyway, in Holyoke, Maine, there's a guy named Robert Bubeck, and he's in the hospital. He's recovering well. He's doing quite well. What happened was that he suffered a few superficial injuries when he stood up from his bar stool, sneezed, a fantastic sneeze, and fell backwards through a plate glass door. Now, that's a hell of a sneeze. I've just got to give him that, give him this little, put his head. Do you mind if I play a little kazoo music to that? That's a sneezer. Thank you, Ed. Hold it. Reset that, Ed, please. Please. That brings up a whole new ball game in my thinking here. I'm hearing that guy sneeze like that. But did you know that that in Peru, Indiana? Now I spent some time in my early life living in the state of Indiana. Did you know that in Peru, Indiana, Lee, don't run around. I'm talking to you now. You're not listening. Did you know that in Peru, Indiana? I can always tell when she's not listening. Do you know that? I really can. You can't fool me. Do you know that in Peru, Indiana, that in the spring of the year, they have the annual sneezing contest? It is an actual competition among local sneezers to come and sneeze. Now, it's very objective. I mean, you can't really judge a sneezer on the basis of how far he falls backward or how many, you know, windows he breaks at sneezing. But actually, it is subjective. In other words, they have a team of judges who judge the most spectacular sneeze. It falls in several categories. The most spectacular, the most explosive, the most creative, and the juiciest. Those are the categories in which competition is performed. Now, I'm not kidding you. They actually have this. You're listening. You're probably saying, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But it's really great. And people used to come from, you know, hundreds of miles around to watch these really great sneezers. You know, some people can sneeze at will. Did you know that? A great sneezer can. And a lot, yes, they can, and a lot of us can't, you know. I'm the kind of guy who one time, for an entire six-month period, I was really bugged because, have you ever had this experience, you know, you're walking along, and all of a sudden you feel a tickling, you know, the tickling in the nose, and you feel a sneeze coming on. And then it disappears. Then it comes back, and then it disappears, and you can't get the damn thing out. For 6 months, I kept nursing a sneeze, trying to get it out. And what was worse was that I was sitting in this elegant restaurant with this girl. 6 months, this sneeze has been hiding around in the back of my ear there. And suddenly, without even any warning, it came out totally without any, involuntarily. Like that, you know, and the soup flew up and it was all over the front of this girl, and I knocked over the fern plant. And it was really embarrassing. But I can't control the sneeze. I cannot control a sneeze. Other people can, and I have had terrible times when I have been able to, Now, my brother is the other type. My brother makes me bug. He can do all this stuff. Have you ever had somebody in your family who could do stuff that you couldn't even remotely approach? You know, from the age of five, my kid brother could actually move his ears. He could wiggle his ears about an inch and a half. I mean, he wiggles them like a donkey. I don't even, you know, most people can get a little. He can actually wiggle his ears. They go up and down. And so I realized immediately when I was about, you know, I was about 8 or 9, I realized immediately that Randy had a fantastic talent. Really, no way I could come near this. And he can do it without moving his face or anything. You know, most people get that squinched up look and they struggle. Randy could move those ears back. He could move his ears as easy as he could move his foot, you know. His ears go up and down. So from about the time he was maybe 8 or 9, I began to train him. And I was training him in moving his ears separately. And by the time he was 14, he could move both of his ears separately or one singly. Try that. You can do it, Ed? I can't believe it. You really can? Watch this. Watch this. Fantastic. He's wiggling his ears. Great Scott, Ed. That's beautiful. Well, see, the ear muscles have to be trained just like any other muscles, you know, and some people are born with very vestigial ear muscles, and others are. You know, they say that people with very strong ear muscles are very close to the horse or the donkey. See, man is not a pure species, you know. Somewhere back in your very early background, Ed, there was a donkey who got around there, little hanky-panky, and in fact, my brother, you know, my mother was very embarrassed about this when my kid brother could do this. But he can wiggle his ears, and I can see that. And it's very disconcerting. Like Randall would, for example, my brother would sit in a class, and he could cause the entire class to lose its cool, and to lose its basic cohesion. He sits in the back there, see, and then he starts slowly to move his ears in a circular fashion, and he could move them in a circle. So then he could flick one at a time. And you could hear the teacher lose the train of what she was saying. She's saying, and now if we take up the principal exports of Peru, I was speaking of the principal... And his ears, he's not doing it. He's just sitting there listening, but his ears are moving, see? And he used to do great things like that. And I always really envied him for that. Now, on the other hand, Bolas, for example, Bolas was my friend, and Bolas... In the group of friends I had, I had this one Polish friend, Bolas Rakowski. He's Polish. And he had a great enemy who was also his friend. See, they were always competing. Was Géza Németh. Géza Németh was Hungarian. Now, I learned how to speak Hungarian from Géza, and I learned how to speak Polish from Bolek, which is more properly pronounced than Polish. It's Bolek. Stasz and Bolek. His brother was Stasz. Bolek was Bolek. And so I used to, you know, I'd speak Polish to Bolas, but to his mother. See, Bolas, he was in school with me, and he spoke, adequate English, like all the rest of us did. You know, basic kid walking around English. But at home, when I would go to Bolas's house, they only spoke Polish at the house. So I would speak, whatever Polish necessary to say, where's Bolas? And she would say, go to a store. And that would mean that Bolas was hanging around back at the Sherwin-Williams paint sign. And we would go down there and hang around. We used to hang around back at a sign. I don't know why. We just stood around back at a sign. Well, Géza Németh, now, on the other hand, I learned in combat how to speak the Hungarian that I learned to speak in that family. For example, you'd hear his mother or his father upstairs hollering, Tashik! And Géza would look up from whatever he was doing in the basement. Well, any of you people who know anything about Hungarian realize immediately now the fight is on. And so I would get involved in that, the battle, and very shortly then I learned to say, which roughly translates, I won't bother our kids up. It's a very exciting thing when you learn that people around you have talents that are unusual. Bolas, the reason I brought Bolas up, Bolas was the greatest knuckle cracker I ever knew. He could crack a full octave. He could get a full octave sound. Now, that's pretty fantastic. You know, that's eight notes. And Bolas used to sit there and crack his knuckles. And he would crack them in all different ways. And then he would crack them in rhythm. He could crack them, say, to the Washington Post march. And I always envied this, you know, because I never had any of that talent. I could not do this. Any of the simple, basic folk bodily talents eluded me. Schwartz, on the other hand, had a fantastic talent, which I cannot discuss on the air. But his talent was exceedingly spectacular. He could be heard a block and a half sometimes in a high wind. And so Schwartz had his talents too. And we used to compete in these various things. Look at that. Look what Lee is doing. Where did you learn that? That's fantastic. I can't do it. What do you mean? You pull a thumb back like that? What's this? I can't do that. You can touch your wrist with your thumb? No way. I couldn't do that. If I tried that, I'd bust my hand off. Now, that's what I mean. See, now, that's a folk talent. You're born with that. Look at what Ed can do. Oh, Ed, please. The girls are fainting in the control room. Now, my father, now, wait a minute. I'll tell you what my old man could do, and I always envied him for this. Now, wait, this is a really fantastic one. Now, you've seen guys with double-jointed thumbs that can snap their thumb out of joint like that? Well, that's a sickening sight, right? In fact, this is a trick that Flick would have, see? Flick was... he played on the ball team I played on, see? So Flick was a rotten hitter. I mean, he could not hit, but he could always get on base because Flick is standing up there at the bat, see? And this guy would throw this inside pitch right across the letters. And Flick would go, oh, he got me! And his thumb would be out of joint. And the umpire could hardly say you didn't get hit, you know? And he'd score on first base. He's hit. And his thumb would be terrible. Look, hanging down, and the trainer would come out and straighten it out. He could do it at will. Now, but wait a minute. You haven't heard anything. My father used to make my mother flip. She used to just absolutely hide her head under the pillow and screw, I can't look, oh, stop. Whenever he wanted to really needle everybody, you know, he was really, you know, giving them the business, like at a party or something like this, he would holler like this. He'd say, hey, you guys, watch this. And my mother would say, no, 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 don't do that. He says, watch this. And he would take off his coat and he would flip his arms back. He had double-jointed shoulders. If you ever seen a guy with double-jointed shoulders, it looks like he's been run over by a truck. And his arms are hanging limply behind his fantastic sight. My mother, no, stop, I can't stop. Oh, and he'd walk around, and he would pretend he's been hit by a train or something. And the people are yelling and hollering. Now, that's folk talent. He would really make it big on a talk show, you know, doing that. Watch my shoulders. Well, now, this kind of talent is not to be put down. Another great talent. Bolas could snap he'd make his knuckles crack. Now, Gazza Nemeth had another, his talent. You want to know what Gazza Nemeth's talent was? And it used to bug Bolek, because these two would be constantly competing. Gazza Nemeth was the best, well, I don't know how to say this. As I said, there are some elements in the show that definitely are not in good taste. I concede. But you're just going to have to go along with this. Gazza Nemeth was the best spitter that I ever saw. He was incredible. You go like this. That's better. You don't go like that. If you go like that, that means the show's over. They haven't been recording. You might as well quit the whole damn thing and go home. Now, you gave the wrong cue. It's like this. That means break. See? Break. You know, like that. You don't go like that. That means the seal got in the studio. Look out. That's a very esoteric one. You don't see that often, yeah. Well, thank you, Liz. This is WOR New York.
Who was the first to conquer space? It's incomparable that the first to conquer living space is the Castro convertible. Who conquers space with fine design to save you money all the time? The convertible line, Castro convertible.
No matter what you did to your budget this past holiday season, you can still afford the Castro convertible you always wanted during Castro's spectacular year-end clearance sale. You'll find discontinued, one-of-a-kind convertible sofas, love seats, sectionals, tables, chairs, even some high-fashion accessories, some really outstanding values with some savings up to 40%. Remember, it takes a lot to be number one. Castro manufactures in its own 6 plants, sells direct to you in its own 70 showrooms, and delivers free in its own trucks. Now that you've made sure everyone else has had a good holiday this past year, buy yourself the one gift you can open all year long, a Castro convertible. The time and price is right.
The Veterans Administration says that GI Bill training has been the route to success and financial security for veterans for more than a quarter of a century. And the GI Bill offers the same opportunity it always has. It can provide high school, college, vocational school, or professional school training. It can provide correspondence school study. It can provide on-the-job training. If you are an eligible veteran, whatever kind of training you chose can help you prepare for a better job, a career that will interest you, and the security that comes with higher earnings. Write, call, or visit your nearest VA office today and get the information and help you need to start the training that can make your future years brighter, happier, more secure. In New Jersey, visit 20 Washington Place in Newark. In New York, visit 252 7th Avenue.
Now, we're talking about folk talents here, Gene, and the very many different kinds of folk talents. For example, Geza Nemeth, as I said, was the most creative, accurate spitter I ever saw. He was not only accurate, but he got tremendous distance. Now, have you ever watched this one ball player? Now, I'll tell you who he is. You ever see Bernie Allen play ball? Bernie Allen spits like Nemeth, like Geza Nemeth did. Now, how do they spit? Well, they manage to get the juice into a neat little round wad about the size of a big BB. Now with me, it doesn't work. Like, whoop, you know, all over the front of the shirt and everything. See, but with a guy like Bernie Allen or with Geza Nemeth, he'd go like that. And it's just a little shot. It goes like a BB. Zap! Goes maybe 30 feet. Fantastic. You, like a bam. Well, he used to walk along, and we'd be walking along the street, see, me and Flick and Schwartz, Nemeth and Bolas, and he would just show off, you know. You'd see a dog walking, but you go, like, bam, right between the eyes. And the dog, you know. You know, it's pretty... and he used to really bug Bolas, because Bolas always tried to do it. And he'd go, like that, and it'd bounce off his chin, you know, down into his collar. And the Nemeth would say, look, you get your tongue, you make it like with a... Watch, with a tongue, you use your tongue like this. Now watch, I'll do it slowly. And zap, 30 feet. I just never, you know, I some guys got it and some ain't. Now, that's the truth. And I watch every time I see Bernie Allen come to bat, watch what he does. Bernie Allen walks up to the plate. You know, you've seen Bernie Allen, right? He walks up to the plate. Now, he's not a great ball player. He's not a bad ball player. He's an in-between ball player. But he is he's an all-time spitter. So Allen walks up to the plate, and before he steps into the box, now he's back in the on deck circle, see, right? He walks up to he's got the rosin, he rubs his hands, he grabs the bat, he looks down then, and he swings the bat a couple of times, you know, he's got the big swing, he's getting his shoulders loose, and then he just over his head goes the bat, and then he goes like that, zap, all the way to third base. He lays him right down in the third base coaching box, and you see the third base coach jump all the time. See, that's a signal he's ready. You know, every time I watch for that, I watch for that move. That's a move. That's an athlete. You know, he's really working. Now, I shouldn't tell you some of these other talents. There were other talents that we used to. These are true folk competitions that we used to indulge in. One of the most exciting is gum snapping. Now, I can't snap gum with the all-time greats. I can. I'm serious. The only talent that I could beat anybody with was gum snapping. And if I had some gum here tonight, I would show you, although it would be dangerous. I don't have any with me. If I did have gum here, I would show you what true gum snapping is like. Not only can I snap gum to get that real hard biting whap, it goes like that, but it has a sting and a bite, and control is important in snapping a gum. Now, further than this is important too in gum snapping, is you to be able to do it in rapid succession. Now, it takes some people like 15 minutes to get the gum right in their mouth right to snap, and then it goes plop, you know, this kind of stuff. I hate to see amateurs messing around in a field that they shouldn't mess around in. But when you really snap gum well, I can go pop, 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 right? You heard me do that. And I can shatter windows at 20 feet. Well, and by the way, another thing. The worst kind of gum to use for gum snapping is bubble gum. The amateur, you can always tell the amateur he tries it with bubble gum. No good. Bubble gum, the consistency of bubble gum is made to blow bubbles with, not to snap. It's very different. That's like trying to use hockey skates to do speed skating. You know, you're not gonna mess around. You gotta have the right equipment. So I would suggest one of the best gums to use for snapping is tea berries gum. Now, you can't get that very often. It's an esoteric gum, but I want to tell you, baby, you'll knock guys' glasses right off their heads at 40 feet with your pop. And you got to get that move. Now, that was the only thing I could do, but I can tell you some of the other great performers that I knew in various folk arts. This is a little sensitive, a little delicate here, but I don't know how quite to say this, but they're, I better not. Certain talents, we used to go back at the garage, especially when there was snow, and we used to, you know, me and Schwartz and Flick and Bruner, and it takes great muscular control is where this one comes into. And I never saw anything like the time that Schwartz, I'm serious, Schwartz was melting ice on the roof of the garage. Now, that is a fantastic performance. And he wrote his name on the roof. Now you know, I've seen great performances. I just don't know why I'm bringing out all these folk talents. But I told you early in the show, I told you that there would be certain elements in the show that you may find, disagreeable. But we've got to lay it all out. We've got to say it like it is, you know, sometimes. And I'm just recognizing talents that are hardly ever recognized. And let's come right out and say it. Radio's grown up. We can talk about a few of these things. And I remember the afternoon that it occurred. It was immediately following a good snowstorm, and there were about 6-7 inches of snow all over the ground and up on the on the garage up there. So we were back at the garage, and Bolas, of course, was always trying everything. Bolas says, "Watch this," and everybody's says, "Okay, Bolas is pretty good," but then Schwartz says, "Watch this." And zap! And we could not believe it. It was fantastic. What's worse, it was in about a 20-mile-an-hour wind. He not only had control, he had power, man. And so these talents are not to be disdained. Now, I saw, though, speaking of... I have a letter here. You know, you think I'm inventing this. Listen to this one now. Now, listen carefully, you guys. This is a letter from a woman who spends a great deal of time, if you think I'm making this stuff up, look at this. Here's a woman who spends a great deal of time in the upper Amazon. You remember a couple of months back I did a show on the time that I spent in the upper Amazon. I've been up in there. And she says, "I'm fascinated with the things you say." She says, "You're correct in everything you say about the tribe that you were with, the Shapatas and so on." She says, however, she says, have you ever run into the Colinas, the Colinas Indians? She says, "They live far to the south on the Peruvian Purus, near where it crosses the border into Brazil." That's a river, by the way. "The main, the men line up." Now here's a typical example of folk competition. It's very much in the same line. "The men line up, and each in turn swallows a mixture of the local brew, euphemistically described by some anthropologists as, quote, a sort of beer. The contestant has to gulp down a big gourdful." You know, they have it in gourds. He gulps it down and then throws it up forcefully. "The guy who throws it the furthest wins." So now that's an irping contest. Now I'm not making this up. I'm just telling you these are basic games that people do play. They compete. Whop! You know, and he's, oh my God, look at him. Fantastic. But they also play another little game of whipping each other with ceremonial whips. So the Indians really know what they're doing. Now, that's another game. But now I'll tell you, we see games spring out of basic competition. Now I don't know. I think that the male may be a little more that way than the female. I will make no judgments on this. But it just seems to me that the male is continually involving in competitions, whereas the female may do it occasionally. The male, it's a continual thing. Now I'll show you how a typical game opened up one day. These things just happen. We for some reason or other, this crowd that I was with when I was a kid, me and Schwartz and Bolas and Bruner and Flick, we took to eating our lunch. Now I can't explain this. Can any of you explain this? Any social commentators out there that most of the kids in a school will do the same things. You agree with that, Liz? Most of the kids will do the same thing. In other words, if they have a cafeteria in the school, most of the kids will eat lunch in the cafeteria. Do you agree with that? Okay. Now, on the other hand, if, let's say, they have a basketball game, most of the kids will go to it. But why do certain kids are not in this? Now, for this, here's an example. Now, we had a great big cafeteria in our high school, a huge cafeteria, and it was about a half a block square. Now, I was given money to eat in the cafeteria every day. But for some crazy reason, Schwartz and Flick and Broder and myself took, and this is in cold weather, I mean, it's like zero. We took to eating our lunch out in back of the garage, which is back of the school. Now, what would our lunch be? Well, we would go across the street to John's, which was a delicatessen across the street, and we would buy ourselves a couple of Twinkies and an ice cream cone in the middle of the winter and go out. That would be our lunch. Now, we would all stand around in this cold garage with the wind. Why this garage? I don't know. With the wind blowing like hell, and all the other kids are sitting down in the cafeteria, you know, and doing what kids do. Hey, Ollie, you know, and this kind of stuff. And we're in the garage eating our lunch. Well, out of this garage scene sprang several very complicated games. The garage had concrete walls, you know, with cinder block walls, you know, concrete bricks, rather, concrete block walls. See, up they go. Well, we're standing in this cold garage. Without any warning, one day, Flick takes a run at the wall with his lunch. So he takes a run at the wall and jumps up and kicks his foot against the wall. It's about 3 or 4 feet up. You know, he just takes a kick, see? And you can see his heel mark. Well, at that, Schwartz then says, "Watch me!" And he takes a run, and he flies up in the air, he kicks, and there's a kick mark, a heel mark about 6 inches higher than Flick's. Flick says, "Oh, well, wait a minute. You started all the way back by the door. You ran further. Wait. I'm going to stop by the door now. Watch this." And he runs like hell. He jumps up. Bam! He kicks. Now his kick is about 7 or 8 inches higher than Schwartz's. Well, at which point I got into the act. I'm standing there with my Twinkie in my hands. So I go back. Now we've already got the rules. See how rules evolve? The rule says you start from where the door is, you know, where the door jamb is. You start there. You can't run back further than that or closer than that. You start where the door jamb is. So I go back to the door, and I run like that, and I leap, and I make a big kick. I'm about an inch and a half higher than Flick. So Flick says, "Oh, wait a minute now. Come on." He says, "Oh, wait. You're starting over by the other side of the garage. You got to start over the left side." See, I got a bigger, longer run because I ran diagonally. At which point, Flick says, "Well, if you're going to start over there, okay." So he goes back. Now the rules are getting very, very, you notice they're getting very refined now. You don't start just by the door. You start by the right side of the door and cut across the floor diagonally, which gives you another foot of running. So Flick runs back and he says, "Okay, watch this now." Well, Flick puts his foot down by the door jamb and he starts to move like a shot. And he goes, he kicks, boom. Oh, fantastic kick, about 6 feet off the ground. Well, he falls heavily back down to the ground, and he says, "Okay, try that one." Well, all the while, Bolas has been saying nothing. Bolas is about 6 inches shorter than the rest of us. He was built like a fire plug with feet, you know, and yeah, he was squat. He had bulging muscles on his shoulders, a thick neck. And Bolas was a born, guaranteed, absolutely born fullback. He was a great fullback and born fullback. Bolas, as a matter of fact, when he played football, and this was, again, part of... You see, everybody has his own style in doing things. And Bolas, when he played football, it was like, literally, like playing football with a mad bull. There was a fanaticism about him that just no way for me to describe it. When Bolas would get the ball, he just shoved the ball in Bolas' gut. You know, he comes charging out. We used the split tee, actually, when we played football. Bolas played on the football tee. So Bolas is playing, and I'm playing up there. At this point, I'm doing a lot of blocking. I was a blocking back. So Bolas, when the signal would be called, you know, give the ball to Bolas. Bolas fullback. That's all he ever did. He never went wide. He never went out for a pass. You just shoved the ball in Bolas' gut, and he would get low to the ground. He would be just like an arrow, and he would just hit. He just hit, and you'd see the entire line, you know, 270-pound guys, the entire line would go, and move backwards, maybe 6 or 7 inches. It was just Bolas, you know. So Bolas is watching his scene. He's saying nothing. He was a laconic type. And so Bolas, without saying a word, he's got his lunch in a big sack. You know, Bolas is Polish, see, and he's got a big chunk of Polish bread with a salami sticking out. That was his lunch, you know. So Bolas walks back to the line, and it was at that point that I saw one of the great athletic performances. If this kind of stuff had been harnessed and put into the Olympics, God knows how far it could have gone. You know, there are you see the natural athlete. That's what Bolus was. Natural, pure. Anything he did great. So Bolus goes back by the line, and he starts to run. Well, he had this low run. He would run low like a pig. Have you ever seen a pig run? They run low with their head down, right? You've seen them, Ed? Well, Bolus puts his head down just like he played football, and he runs across the garage. His feet go gung, 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 gung. And he runs. He's picking up his feet. Gung, 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 gung. And he left his feet. Fantastic. I couldn't believe it. His feet go up out from under him, both of them. He is now vertical. His head is down. His feet are up. And he goes, boom! He kicks the ceiling. He kicks the ceiling. It's about 6 inches right below the roof. And he falls back. Pow! He falls back on the back of his neck. See, the thing about a true, natural, dedicated athlete, he does not concern himself over physical, over any physical problem may result. You agree with that, Ed? In other words, you take a guy like Larry Brown running for the Washington Redskins. He's not worried about breaking a rib. If he breaks a rib, that's part of the game, right? So, but the rest of us are not like that. As we're running, they're going to get me. They're going to kill me. They're going to get... Oh, no. Not the Bolus type. Bolus flew up in the air, kicked the ceiling, landed back on the back of his neck, just came straight down. His lunch goes all over the floor. You know, here goes the Polish bread, the salami, the kielbasa, all of it. See, goes all over the floor. And we just stood there. My God almighty, what a kick. Well... From that minute on, I mean, you know, it was a whole new attitude towards Bolus, because Bolus had performed far and above and beyond the call of athletic duty. He really kicked. Now, you know that to this day, in that garage back at the school, there's a heel mark. It's a black skidding heel mark right under the ceiling. And I have seen it since. You remember the day I went over and looked at it? There it is. I saw it since. That Bolus's great effort still remains. And I wonder how many kids have gone through that garage and do not realize they're on historic ground. Do not realize that heel up there represents like Babe Ruth's 714th home run. You know, that's where it went. He really booted one. Well, these simple folk, other folk talents, now that we're bringing up folk talents, one of the great folk talents that I knew was Alec Josway. Josway, now certain folk talents are not necessarily athletic, you agree. Josway's great folk talent was essentially musical. And Josway could take a rubber band. Now you listen to this, Liz, and try it. He could take a rubber band and clamp it between his teeth, and he could stretch the band out, and he could pluck that rubber band, and he could get the most beautiful dulcet tones. He could play music. I remember him playing one day... I cut down the old pine tree. Did you ever hear that tune? And they hauled it away to the mill to make a coffin of pine for that sweetheart of mine. Well, they cut down the old pine tree. Did you ever hear that one? Oh, they cut down the old pine tree and they hauled it away to the mill to make a coffin of pine for that sweetheart of mine. Oh, they cut down the old pine tree. Well, Josway would play that... Doing, 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 doing. And there wasn't a dry eye in the crowd. He not only played it well, but he played it with heart and soul and feeling. And whenever we had a party, Josway would get out his old rubber band and play. Now, I'll tell you another great talent. Farkas. You've heard me talk of Scott Farkas before? Scott Farkas's talent was hitting guys. Farkas... I mean, I never saw anything like it. I saw Farkas, because that was his basic activity, really. That wasn't... He was talented. He was very good at it. We've all known the males, again, more than females, I suspect, have all known in every school as one guy who's really a tough son of a gun, you know? And he likes to do it. And he would hit. Farkas had a punch that would travel about 6 inches, and I'm telling you, would knock a hole in a brick wall. He just hit you, huh? Without warning sometimes. He just come up, bam, right in the eye. Well, now, this was his activity, but he had a talent. You know, even the most animalistic of us have another side. And Scott Farkas could take a pencil. Lee, are you listening? I want you to make this note. Scott Farkas could take a pencil, lay it across his teeth. Now, all of us can play music across our teeth with a pencil, right? Oh, no. Farkas played music. It's a big difference. And Scott Farkas... And by the way, Farkas once got thrown out of an auditorium session for doing that. Yes, we had a recital. You know how from time to time the school orchestra was up on the stage struggling its way through pomp and circumstance and the overture to Norma, and Farkas is about nine rows back with his pencil playing a far greater overture to Norma, or far greater pomp and circumstances than was going up on the stage. And you could hear him all over the auditorium. He's going away there. He gets this. And finally, Miss Robinette got up and grabbed him by the back of the neck and simply threw him out in the hall with his pencil going full blast. Well, now, this was a talent and a good one. Do any of you have any other talents that you'd like to throw in while you're here? That's not a talent. That's a grotesquerie. I can't describe that on the air. That's sickening. Lee can grab her foot. I'll describe what she can do. She just did it in the control room, and everybody's a little worried about it. She grabbed her foot with her hand. Now, try this one. If you think this is a thing you can do. She grabbed her foot with her hand, and then with her knees stiff, with her legs straight, raised her leg straight out and continued to hold it, raised her leg straight out until it was at right angles from her body, pointing directly south. Now, that's a hell of a trick, Lee. Do that again. Let's see if you did that again. Do that again. Grab your foot. There, she grabs her foot. Now she raises it. Look at that. that's really good. Can you do that, Liz? No. Well, see, these talents are not inherited. That's the truth. I've always envied my father's ability to work his double-jointed shoulders. It was not inherited. Simply did not pass down from father to son. We've seen this so many times in life that the Franklin Roosevelt's sons never became what he was. I'm sure that Tom Seaver's kid will not pitch a no-hit game in the National League. And so it always is this way. Do you have any other talents that you've seen in your life? Well, all right, I'll tell you one talent that my brother, again. My brother has a majestic talent. Again, it's one of those talents that borders upon, if you're squeamish, it borders upon ill taste. My brother can take a quart of buttermilk. Now, I happen to dig buttermilk. There aren't many of us. The buttermilk fans are very a small, beleaguered crowd. There aren't many of them. I love this stuff. How about you, Ed? Do you like it? Nope. All right. You like it? All right, but not too much. You can take it or leave it. But me, you know, a true buttermilk fan is a zealot. He is a zealot. And my brother, he was, from the time he was a little kid, buttermilk, you know, he'd flip over buttermilk. He loved it. I liked it, but it's only in later years that I've come to really appreciate good buttermilk. Well, my brother would do the following with a quart container of buttermilk. Now, listen to this. Buttermilk. He would open the container, and he would say, "Watch this." A dead silence would fall, and he takes the container of buttermilk. He raises it after taking a breath, you know, preparing himself. He sort of hunches his shoulders a little bit, tilts his head back, and without swallowing, would pour the entire quart of buttermilk into his trap. Now, try that on for size. Then he would get the buttermilk, and then it's now down in his gut, or down in him, whatever it is. He hasn't swallowed it. The buttermilk is now in, and then he waves, and then he goes, fantastic trick. He could drink an entire quart of buttermilk in one swell foop. Just like that. Fantastic. Now, how do you like that trick? After which, now listen what he would do. He would polish it off with this majestic performance. He would swallow the buttermilk right down the entire quart. He would stand there for a second. Everybody's waiting. And then he would go, the most spectacular burp. He could, well, You know that? Do you know that he can burp the entire national anthem? He has control. Fantastic. Now, these are all folk talents, which I deplore them. Now, no, wait, I'm going to go on record. Don't send me a letter immediately saying, well, that was an awful taste. I deplore them. I agree with you. They're awful. I mean, the idea of Indians standing around throwing up beer, I mean, that's sickening. I agree. The idea of my brother drinking a whole quart of buttermilk and then going, whoa, this is sickening. The idea of Schwartz writing his name on a roof, believe me, I am against this. I agree with you. It is terrible. And sometimes I deplore being part of a race that does stuff like that. You never see squirrels doing that. You will never see a moose walking up to the side of a garage and saying to another moose, watch this! You know, no way. It's only man that has that kind of depravity. And tonight we have taken the opportunity to salute this type of athletic endeavor. I'll bet there's 45 guys out there now trying it with the buttermilk. One warning, though, if you don't know how to do it, you're liable to drown. I could see them, bringing you into Bellevue, and they say, I don't know, he drowned in the buttermilk. I don't know. So be careful. These are dangerous things. This is WOR New York. You stay tuned for Lester Smith and the news.
Hey, did you hear the one about the worn-out tire? It'll kill you.
Tire Industry Safety Council. This is the news in detail on the hour from the WOR newsroom. A room-to-room search of the Howard Johnson Hotel in downtown New Orleans was undertaken tonight for the snipers who killed 6 persons and wounded 17 others. But there was more than one sniper, other than the one killed on the roof of the hotel gunfire from the helicopter shortly before 10 o'clock last night. Well, police admit they don't know. There could have been only one, or two, or three. And if there were more than one, then the other or others apparently escaped. At a news conference tonight, New Orleans Police Superintendent Clarence Geruso made this statement. If we don't find anyone, then we're going to admit that something went wrong, possibly with us, and return to normalcy. Of course, there could have been only one sniper, but I don't think so. A comment of Police Superintendent Geruso. Another day of seemingly futile bargaining in the Long Island Railroad strike. WOR's Burt Wilson reports.
Talks of the soon-to-be 41-day-old strike of the Long Island Railroad has now been recessed until 10:30 tomorrow morning. Little or no progress was reported since both sides refused to brief newsmen following their evening bargaining session. What may be significant is that